You really want these guys investing your money for you? Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principles and Policy. And along with me today, as usual, in his studio, as I'm in mine, is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
We've been talking about how warm it's been, and now all of a sudden I'm freezing to death. I'm sitting back here in my library with the heat cranked up because I am freezing.
I pulled to pull sweaters out of the closet. My wife had backed away thinking that the 80-plus degree warm spell that we had was actually the beginning of summer and not just a very cruel joke.
Well, I talked to a mutual friend of ours who has some knowledge of solar activity and solar flares, and he explained to me that if you look at the weather very closely and look at the solar weather, when we were very warm in March, the entire time there was a gigantic solar flare, and now that that solar flare has moved to the other side of the sun, we are freezing cold.
So in other words, we're back to normal.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the reason it's that way is because of the solar activity of late. The thermosphere is about one-tenth of its normal size, so it's extremely sensitive to solar activity. And that happens during periods of when the sunspot cycles are not operating necessarily as they're supposed to, and ours certainly is not. We were supposed to be at peak solar activity this year, but now it's stretched out to 2014, which is 2 years from now. The sun is not as predictable as we sometimes think, so we're paying the price for that, which is not our topic.
No, but since it's on people's minds, if the forecast here on Sunday night is any indication, a lot of folks, maybe even depending on how far this dips back, and maybe even our listening audience, may be waking up to some white. Not exactly what you want in late April when you've already probably put out some of your flowers and your plants and things, but hey, that is life in a temperate zone.
I've decided to wait till May 15th, just like I always do, the last average day of frost here. Before you faded for a second, you said white stuff, which it should be enough to throw everybody into an absolute panic.
Well, at least in the Columbus area, the drivers might be in an absolute panic thinking about white stuff coming down, that's for sure. People who like to use other people's money. Yes, that's right, ladies and gentlemen. We're again talking about the federal government. And Chuck, we've got a doozy coming out of the White House now, and it's not coming from Barack Obama, but he's coming from one of his underlings, Education Secretary Arne Duncan. Duncan, who was an Obama appointee early on in his term, comes out of the Chicago public system. On Friday of this last week, in a press conference, Arne Duncan made the comment that if we subsidize your and my tax dollars, the federal government subsidizes college tuition for people who can't afford it, that's not going to increase the overall cost of tuition to everybody else. Now, Charles, I don't know about you, but I don't have a degree in economics, but I did study enough basic economics to understand supply and demand curves and putting in ceilings and floors on those supply and demand curves.
Well, exactly. When supply is tight and demand is high, prices go up. There's just no getting around that. And in fact, putting a cap on it does is make it impossible for the people who are in charge of the supply to get enough to supply the product. One of the reasons that supply is low is that demand is high, and you have to develop new resources in order to satisfy the demand, and that costs money. You can't make the curve go away by suppressing one end or another of it artificially. It doesn't work.
But that's what a subsidy actually does, ladies and gentlemen. It creates a greater demand, because when you have a pool of people, and let's say a certain percentage of them, a small percentage of them, can meet the threshold level that the college is putting out as far as what their tuition is, but others can't quite make it. When the government comes in and says, well, we'll subsidize you, but we'll pick up part of the cost so that you can get in there, demand goes up. Well, Chuck, as we know, when demand goes up, supply either has to come down because you only have a finite amount of space or professors teaching, or the cost has to slide up in order to create a new equilibrium.
Well, sure. Think about it this way. If demand is high and supply is low, what's the only way to satisfy the demand? You have to build new buildings, hire new professors, and not only that, but you have all the adjuncts that go along. Education isn't just about professors. It's about services at universities and all those kinds of things. All that costs money. If you're going to supply 25% more students, you have to have 25% more space and 25% more teachers and 25% at least more support staff. That doesn't necessarily make the cost go down.
Well, no, of course it doesn't. However, when you're dealing with the federal government, since they've been in the subsidy business for so long in so many areas of life, they believe, just as Arne Duncan has said publicly, that no, this will not increase the costs of education, and it's not going to create a bubble. We can just go out there because we really just want to see more people go to college and have that experience, and that's a positive goal for us. So therefore, we just need to take your money and just start pumping it into that.
Well, and of course, that's a logical fallacy. As we've already pointed out, you can't artificially suppress one side of the demand-supply curve or another. And when you do that, all you do is either drop supply to the point where nobody can get it, or you suppress demand by raising the price so high that, again, nobody can get it. And these people don't understand basic economics, which should be no surprise to anyone who has seen the economic policy that's come out of this White House in the last 2.5-3 years. But again, this is the kind of silliness. And by the way, why would anyone hire someone from the Chicago public education system as their education secretary? Can you think of a worse school system besides maybe the DC public schools? Someone you would not want to emulate?
Well, I think you're probably right on that. Also, the situation is Duncan isn't just showing his rank ignorance of basic economic issues. He's also trying to get folks to buy into this by saying, if you're going to have debt, this is very good debt to have. In other words, if you want to strap yourself to go to college, oh, that's great to have that kind of debt. And it's like, Chuck, we all know that debt is considered biblically a curse, and the borrower is servant to the lender. So is the federal government, in some senses, trying to make sure that they're the master of many of these people who are going to college? Arne Duncan, and this is coming, ladies and gentlemen, from an article in CNSnews.com that was headlined by Fred Lucas, headlined on Friday, April the 20th. He quotes Arne Duncan saying, when you have no debt, that's maybe the best situation. What do you mean, maybe? If you have no debt, that's a pretty good situation to be in. But he says, but this is not bad debt to have. As a matter of fact, it's very good debt to have. Chuck, Arne Duncan is living in la-la. I think,
yeah.
Because what he's talking about, he's talking to 18 to 21-year-old kids who are either putting themselves across the barrel or their families. Because remember, we started this conversation by saying these folks are going to be in a pool of people who, without this government subsidy, would not be able to afford the current cost of a 2-year or a 4-year degree because they just don't have the income. They haven't saved for it. Maybe there's the lack of motivation in some wings of this group. But the point is that if the federal government, and I should say we because it's our tax dollars, if we come in and say, well, hey, I'll tell you what, we'll give you 60% of what the cost would be. You just figure out how to come up with the other 40%. Oh, and when the bill comes due later, then you can pay for it out of all your great new earnings you're going to be making because you have that 4-year degree. Because Arne Duncan goes on and uses that same tired canard. Oh, we have data that your earning potential throughout your lifetime goes up from a high school graduate to a 2-year degree to a 4-year degree. So that's the best long-term investment we can make, he said. However, if you get yourself in so much debt because you're not in a position to take it on to start with, and let's say you go to a 4-year college like The Ohio State University, and let's say you major in theater. Well, Chuck, I know a lot of people who majored in theater who basically are nickel and diming their way past their student debt 10 and 15 years later because they're either waiting tables or they're working other jobs because they couldn't find a job in theater.
Barry, I know someone, I had an acquaintance once years ago, who got a master's degree in the classics. And you know what he did? He got a job driving a UPS truck. Honestly, I'm pretty sure he could have driven the UPS
truck.
And there's nothing wrong with
those alternatives.
That's a lucrative position, actually. Those are kind of coveted because they make a lot of money. But my point is, he could very easily have gotten the job driving the UPS truck without the degree in classics. I'm not sure he had to cite Virgil, quote the Aeneid, in his employment exam. It's really absurd. So he had all this debt. Well, once you're in the UPS job, you really work pretty hard to keep it because it's good work and it's pretty high pay right now. And it has been for years and years and years and years. Believe me, I'm not belittling UPS drivers. I'm saying don't waste your money on a degree if you want to be a UPS driver.
Exactly. Now, we've said in the past sometimes that we think this administration talks out of both sides of their mouths. Well, Arne Duncan was doing a great job of that in this press conference because on one side saying this is good debt to have, then he says, but we're worried about debt going higher and higher. And so when we have an opportunity to work together, ooh, don't you love that kumbaya language? Work together in a bipartisan way to prevent that escalation of debt by subsidizing it. This is the right thing to do. I expect folks to step up and do that. This is your government master telling you this is the thing we've determined is best. You're going to go do it for us because whose money are they using, Chuck, to subsidize these college loans? A lot of these people don't qualify for or don't have the ability to pay for to start with.
Okay,
it's the rest of us. They want us to take on more debt.
There are other magic government phrases that are supposed to make all concern disappear in this piece. For instance, I'll give you a quote here. This is about shared responsibility. This giving out loan subsidies is all about, now get this, all about shared responsibility. We are challenging states to continue to invest. Okay, states do not invest.
And I like, we'll keep reading that.
Okay.
We can't
Duncan
do this
said,
by ourselves.
We can't do this by ourselves. And universities have to keep their tuition down and also build cultures around completion. We are trying to do a lot to provide greater transparency and scorecards so parents can make choices about which universities are going to provide a great education, but also at a reasonable cost. Okay, so you are running up demand by essentially subsidizing it and then blaming
right.
the universities because they are increasing
right.
tuition in order to pay the cost to build the buildings and pay the professors and bring in new services. Yeah, not only that, they're challenging the states to invest. Okay, let me translate that for you. We are challenging the states to raise taxes in order to subsidize the universities that are within their borders.
In order to give to the universities a subsidy, see, the federal government's going to give to the incoming students a subsidy, so that'll pump tuition rates up. But they expect the states to step in and give the universities a subsidy to keep tuition rates down so that they create this false equilibrium by utilizing our tax dollars on both sides of it. That's kind of a pincer strategy, and that usually doesn't work too well for too long. But at the end of this article, a real education professional who happens to be an economist by the name of Professor Richard Vedder, who's from Ohio. He was an economics professor at Ohio University. He's now the director of the Center for College Affordability and Productivity. He just said it just straight up. He said, Arne Duncan, he's flat out wrong. And he cited a number of studies that basically showed they took a control group of for-profit universities, ones who were eligible for federal aid and ones who weren't. Funny thing is, the ones eligible for federal aid, their tuition was 75% higher than the schools who didn't take or qualified for federal aid. 75% higher rates of tuition. So for Arne Duncan to say, oh, if we subsidize it, the rates won't go up, he's living in a fishbowl.
Well, yeah, he's living in fantasy land. But then again, you know, what do you expect the former director of the Chicago school systems to be in? These guys have been living in fantasy land for the last 50 or 60 years because they keep talking about all the improvements they're making and all these great strides they're making. Meanwhile, literacy rates are going down, 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 and have been for 55 or 60 years. And they've gotten especially bad in places like Chicago, Los Angeles, D.C., New York, major centers where you have these gigantic consolidated school systems that are bureaucratic nightmares in which basically, not that I want to give modernly trained teachers too much autonomy, but the fact is that system used to work and the current one does not. So where do we go from here? We've got a fantasy land director of education. Hey, I got an idea. How about we eliminate the Department of Education and eliminate federal subsidies for education, higher, lower, middle?
Well, you see, that's ultimately the constitutional choice, Charles, because you cannot find anywhere in the Constitution of the United States any provision that allows for the development of a Department of Education. It is not the purview of the federal government. That is something that, specifically by the 10th Amendment, is reserved to the states or to the people. And the states are doing a mighty fine job, thank you very much, of messing up education on their own. They don't need the federal government's help.
Yeah, exactly. Well, unfortunately, Barry, we're out of time.
So it comes too soon.
It always does. Ask you to join us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.